Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for today's camp notes for August 2nd, 2025, the ninth day of Ravens camp today. Beautiful day, by far the nicest day we've had. It's been sweltering heat and blistering sun. Today, very mild temps. We're on field three, so we had the shade when we wanted it, and it was nice standing out in the sun today even. It was just a reasonable 75 to 80 degrees maybe on the field, and a nice breeze. It was just very, very pretty day. No pads today, so it's limited hitting. It looks like to me like the pass rush was going full bore today, so it's nice to see less brother-in-law play on the offensive line. Now, they're still not tackling Lamar, of course, but they're trying to create pressures, and that's always good to see. Few absences and then some big personnel changes. So we'll start with the absences. Emory Jones, Ardarius Washington, Isaiah Likely, all out for extended periods. Not expected back for the opener, I don't believe, in any cases. Marcus Major, the running back, remains out, undisclosed injury. Cornerback Bilal Kone is not back yet. A shoulder injury. We're told he was dealing with some pain management issues, but should return soon. Tez Walker has a soft tissue injury, per Harbaugh. This is really the wrong time for Walker, and it's a darn shame. This is August 2nd. On the 5th, they'll have the practice with the Colts, which is one of the five live fire opportunities he has this preseason. Then on the 7th, the game with the Colts. We certainly hope he'll be back for that, but he might not be based on where we're at. He's had a big camp so far, so you really want to see an opportunity for him to play, get some significant snap count out there, and see what he can do. And unfortunately, this is coming at the wrong time, and it's one of the positions where the Ravens tend to pick up soft tissue injuries is wide receiver, another is corner, and the Ravens have certainly had their share of both this camp, and have some guys who are either walking wounded or staying in the clubhouse wounded. Anyway, had a fairly significant turnover on the roster otherwise today, so. An off day yesterday, can be the case that after an off day, you'll make a couple of changes. Brent Urban returned. I think everybody probably within range of my voice now knows that happened. His wife, and he's been on Twitter talking about it. He came back. He's now wearing number 58, his best friend Michael Pierce's number. There is a real question, I think, of where Brent Urban fits on this team. So he's a good backup 3/5 tech. He's the only real number five tech behind Broderick Washington at this point. And the five tech is not a position that's used a tremendous amount because you only use it in a base package. There is a little bit more usage that a player like Urban, who is a very gifted run defender, good size, good leverage player, denies space very well. The reason that he may be able to get a little more out of that five tech spot is he plays a little more uncovered end. So the Ravens have some packages. We only put in one outside linebacker. If that's the case, Urban can be a guy whose lines up at a five tech and effectively takes that position like a rush linebacker might, or like even a 4-3 end. You might think of him as doing something similar, but you're short an outside linebacker or an edge defender on the field, a true edge, and you have Urban instead. So that would be a possible usage. But there is a real question of where's the roster spot coming for him. I mean, it's very apparent the Ravens can use an additional body to get through camp. They do have three nose tackles right now they're kind of taking a look at, and all of them, I think, have done a little bit of good things, and they all also have some drawbacks. John Jenkins is ancient now by NFL terms at 36. And is played the most snaps of his career in each of the last 2 years with the Raiders. So, you know, maybe he's still got something left in the tank. We've got Okoye, the player who did not go to college, but is an enormous nose tackle. He's been cited by a couple of different times as being just, you know, one of the biggest human beings anybody's ever seen. He also has some problems with wind that I've mentioned before, and he's been seen on the stationary bike. Winded after just a couple of snaps in 11 on 11. So you don't like to see that. The other one is Jason Jones out of Auburn, who's about 6'6", 325 in that range. Definitely has the prototypical size for that position. And when I talk about those three nose tackles, one of them is going to be needed at all times in addition to Travis Jones on an active game day roster, but they don't need all three. And Brent Urban, though, does not provide a replacement for any of those three. It's just not a one-for-one replacement for a nose tackle that you would use. And if they do start the season with Jenkins, as it appears they will, then I think if they were need a new nose tackle, they'd go out to the street and get a new nose tackle, which means Urban is only really backing up Madubuike. That's obviously not an exchange you'd like to make. He's backing up Broderick Washington, and he's backing up Aeneas Peebles. And Peebles, a little more of a shifty internal player, and obviously some of the size deficit that he has for the position is something that the Ravens may be looking at and saying, I don't know if we trust this guy to stop the run. They have guys they can kick inside. Tavius Robinson, most notably, is a guy I think who can kick inside. But he's best suited in playing a more traditional edge run defense role on early downs. He's done some good things in practice this camp, which makes me believe he could do more in terms of some pass rush situations. But I think his most important role to the Ravens right now is as an early down run defender, because they don't have a lot of other choices in terms of who can do that. They can use Adafi Owe. They could use Kyle Van Noy. If they want to keep those guys fresh for pass rush snaps, they won't do too much of that. Mike Green is another player. I guess they could try and initiate as a run defender, but I think the best way to get the most out of Mike Green is probably to have him on for a bunch of situational pass rush snaps. So there is a real question of just how does Brent Urban fit into this team, but I'm sure they have a good understanding of exactly what his role is going to be or could be. Come roster time. And Urban is a guy who at least once and maybe two or even three times has been a handshake agreement guy that they have cut at on the cutdown date because he was a 5+ year vet. He did not go through waivers. He had an agreement, handshake agreement. That's where this comes from, to re-sign with the Ravens after the initial roster was set and IR moves could be made so that those IR moves would not be season ending. The rules of the NFL have changed a little since that time. And now you have two such spots. This has been true for the last 2 years now, that you can spots 54 and 55. You can put a non-season ending IR player in there. So the value of a pure handshake guy is less. But Brent Urban certainly is a significant safety net for this team. I think everybody's happy to see him back. And he certainly seems to be happy himself from his comportment on Twitter and on the field as well. A couple other guys came into camp, two tight ends, Baylor Cup, who has one career game with the Chiefs, and Scotty Washington, who has one career game with New England under his belt. Scotty Washington, of course, formerly a Raven, is now wearing number 85, and that was Sam Pitt's number. Sam Pitts was one of three cuts. Baylor Cup, you can think of him as kind of being a replacement for Isaiah Likely or another guy they're trying to look at a little bit deeper in the tight end group. They had three releases. I mentioned Sam Pitts already. They also released outside linebacker Dywan Black and kicker John Hoyland. The last, a little bit of a surprise given what the Ravens had said about the kicking competition stretching out into the preseason, and that we'll see both in the preseason games and whatnot. But I don't think the competition was really as close as the kicking percentages would have told you, because I think that most of the longer kicks were loop, and Hoyland really was struggling to make it from 50 yards, whereas loop kicked a 53-yarder and a 63-yarder, I believe, so far. He's missed also. He missed one from 51, and it's not like he's been perfect or anything this camp, but he's been very good. So the ball is coming off his foot very straight. It's just a little surprising that the competition is abruptly over, of course. And in the case of Hoyland, I think there's still a pretty good chance that he'll be kicking for some team this year. If you're looking at a kicker like John Hoyland, you say, okay, this guy, I can go out and get Nick Folk, and he'd help me this year, and he could probably, you know, kick a decent percentage of field goals. But Folk is not a long-term solution to anything. Whereas John Hoyland, if he's actually good, could end up being a four-year, very cheap solution for some team. So they'll sign him to a four-year deal, or they'll have him for ERFA rights 2 years after a minimum contract this year, and then a fourth year he might have to be tendered or you know, signed to some slightly higher contract. But John Hoyland would appear to be very cheap for 3 or 4 years for some team that wants him. Watched on special teams, they had some more punt drills. Now they did this again the other day. I don't remember if it was two practices previously or one. Days are kind of running together for me, and they had an off day yesterday. But the same four punt returners we've seen so far, Miller, Wade, Wallace, and Wester were out there. Chris Horton was mostly watching blocking assignments close to the line of scrimmage. It looked like more that he was watching the return man, but he's very concerned about making sure that they know how to get off the line of scrimmage. They know how to punt the ball and release techniques that you can use on the edge after how long you have to hold your block to protect the punter and whatnot. That said, most of the punts were from the jugs gun that I saw. Stout was kind of simulating catching the ball, dropping it on his foot, and then just allowing the jugs gun play to go off without trying to kick occasionally in those situations. I've mentioned before, there's a very big difference in how easy it is to field a live kicked ball versus a jugs ball, which always follows a very true trajectory. It doesn't wobble in the same way that a punt might, and you don't have the multiple directional angles and draw and movement you can put on the ball based on where you kick it. It comes out of the machine the same way most times. It's a matter a little bit of the jugs gun operator pointing that in a different direction to try and at least make that return man move to track the football. And they did that, I think, pretty well, but it's not the same as a real foot. You know what the really weird situation is? When the other team has a left-footed punter, because the ball rotates in the opposite direction, the Ravens in particular, will often bring in a left-footed punter just to kick to the return man to get them used to the left-handed, the left-footed rotation on the ball that punter will use. And they're one of the organizations who really gets the difference in terms of how that operates. In terms of the returns, though, there are some good things I saw. First of all, ball tracking was absolutely outstanding today. The guys got under the ball, and it's jugs gun again. I don't want to overplay it, but they got under the ball very well. They seemed to be positioned well generally to explode out of the return. They had mixed results in terms of actual explosion, but it was all either okay or very good. None of them were bad. So I rate the punts on a 4-point scale for both ball tracking and then explosion out of the stance. And I had a bunch of 1-1s and a bunch of 1-2s and nothing worse than that. So I think extremely good results. And after they had a ball put on the ground the other day in practice by LeJonte Wester, I think it was nice to have a very clean day. And Wester was one of the guys who looked very good in terms of getting under punts and moving forward as the ball was caught. All right, they moved on. Set and snap drills. These are the ninth straight day they've had these drills. They did better in practice today with a respectable 2 false starts. One of those might have been a delay of game, but regardless of the thing, 2 penalties that are pre-snap like that is a good result. And I think the Ravens would certainly take that given where they've been. And hopefully they're gaining facility with the cadence that will allow them to actually deceive the other team at the line of scrimmage. So part of it is, can you handle your cadence and reduce your pre-snap penalties? Get off your snap right, get out of your stances on time. But a big part of it is, how are you deceiving the opponent? Because a lot of times you want to run these more complex cadences. You go on 3 instead of 1, et cetera, et cetera. You might be in a position in the game where the other team already knows you're going to pass, and you want to try and maybe not make them get an offsides penalty, which would be the best possible results, but just get out of their stance less quickly. Get off the blocks less quickly. The last thing you want is the 4 guys at the line of scrimmage looking like track stars off the snap coming out of the blocks and already starting with a big advantage over your offensive linemen because they're so quick out of the blocks. That's part of what hopefully a varied cadence will give the Ravens. So anyway, they look pretty good in terms of false starts today. I mentioned the kicking thing. I go to the stars of the day. 3 stars of the day I'll point out, and it was a tough day for the offense now. So I'm going to start with that there were 4 interceptions, three of them by Lamar Jackson. But Jaire Alexander was the star of the day. He was beaten early for a touchdown by Keaton Mitchell on a little, I guess you'd call it maybe a wheel. It was a little bit more than a swing, but it was over him on the left sideline and appeared to go the distance afterwards. And I've just loved seeing the ball in Keaton Mitchell's hand all camp. But this one, beating Alexander on a play like that, is really nice. That's a nice feather in his cap. He's done a lot of things against the twos to be very impressive. He's also done a lot of things with the twos where he's just a magnet for the ball because he's the most impressive offensive player on the field after the ones are out. So, they've had Tez Walker in there for some of that. And they have other guys like Tylan Wallace is in with the twos. And Charlie Kolar would be a guy that could get some receptions with the twos. Isaiah Likely now being out means that there really isn't a pretty big drop off in terms of tight end receiving with that two group. And also they want Kolar in there with the one some to run some of those plays. So it's been really nice to see Keaton so impactful with those twos. Now getting back to Jaire, who had two interceptions. The first one came on an underthrown ball. It was 15 yards by the right sideline. It was from Jackson. And this one I would consider, he undercut the ball, taking nothing away from the interception by Jaire because he's reading the quarterback and played the ball correctly. I didn't think it was a very good throw by Jackson. The second one was by the right sideline, 5 yards downfield, so not very far downfield at all. And there was pressure by Travis Jones on the play, which definitely hurried it. And then Alexander, with Jackson slightly distracted, came in and intercepted the ball. So great day for Jaire. There's lots of Jaire questions at the podium about, you know, his energy and his talking and his leadership and this and that, that I'll get to a little later in part. Travis Jones had a very big day today. He backed up Voorhees into the face of Lamar for pressure. That was eventually blown dead as a sack. I would have given it as a sack to Travis Jones right away. It was it's one of these plays where PFF probably would not have charged Voorhees with the sack because Jones did not make it himself, but it was Travis Jones' sack all the way. He created the initial phone booth pocket and then somebody else cleaned up on it. So very nice play there by Travis. Then he bowled Linderbaum for a second pressure, again in the cone. This one was intercepted by Alexander. I think I have that wrong. Yes, I have it wrong. It was the Linderbaum pressure. No, pressure by Travis Jones on Linderbaum. Yes, and it was intercepted by Alexander, so I did say it correctly before. Okay, then the third pressure was to flush Lamar right, and then he threw a short completion to Andrews, but again, great to see Travis Jones, first of all, not playing brother-in-law ball the whole time and really making some progress as a pass rusher. He looks very dominant right now. He might be the most effective pass rusher currently among the players. We've had some decent interior pressure, and Travis Jones has been, to my way of thinking, clearly the most dominant of the inside guys. Matabika hasn't been bad. He's had a couple of pass defenses and passes knocked down at the line of scrimmage in the last practice, but I think Travis Jones has been absolutely excellent. The third player of the game is going to be Adisa Isaac, our player of the day. He had a number of nice run plays. There's actually four nice plays on runs he made. Consecutive plays early in the in practice, he collapsed on Mitchell, and then he contained the backside with Kwenku. So seems to be really playing the backside of run plays exceptionally well, pursues well, but also contains well. And there's always a fine balance between which you want to do more. How much of your position do you want to give up to pursue a play hard? And he's done it well in both ways. He had another play. It was a jet toss to the left side, went all the way to the left sideline, was stretched out there with Buchanan. That was Isaac again doing that with him. He shut down Ali on a cutback to the left. That's another example of, you know, really playing the backside of the play well and knowing your assignment and being in the position to make that tackle. Hit a pass defense in the backfield when he was pressuring. Now, that was against Cooper Rush. Cooper Rush been holding the football a little too long, but it's still impressive to me. And Adisa Isaac needs more pass rush plays. He really needs to show up as a pass rusher in the preseason to secure his spot if there's any more concern that he won't make this team. I will say, by the way, David Ajabo also had a couple of really nice run plays, and they were early in camp. He didn't really follow it up with anything else on the day that I noted, but to see him make a couple of nice plays in terms of playing the run is always a positive thing. All right, I'll take you through my book in terms of the good 11 on 11 plays and the other notes that I have. Let's go one at a time. One of the very first plays, we had Roquan Smith pressuring on Jackson to force a roll right. And then Jackson threw a pass for Justice Hill, who was up the right sideline. It was just off his fingertips. He was behind the defense. Looks like should have been a touchdown. I probably would call it a drop, but it wasn't a super easy catch. And he just got off his fingertips and it was done. I mentioned a couple of nice plays by Ajabo. Both of them were made against Keaton Mitchell, basically to shut down runs for no gain by playing the edge well. We saw in between those two plays, I mean, Keaton Mitchell's just getting the ball every freaking snap from Cooper Rush, but Rush threw a pass left to Mitchell and went over Alexander's head. I mentioned it earlier in the Alexander highlights that it's a play that beat him what appeared to be a touchdown by Mitchell. And Mitchell gets behind the defense. It's over in terms of his speed. All right, we had a long interception down the left sideline, about 30 yards. That was from Jackson, intended for Bateman, very badly underthrown. And a nice job by Nate Wiggins of tracking the ball well in the air, kind of collapsing all around it the way you sometimes see a wide receiver do on a play, but did a really good job tracking and catching that football. I mentioned the next pressure from Travis. Then we had a pressure from Trenton Simpson. Actually, there was another pressure by Travis on that play, who pushed by Daniel Fa'alele on the inside, ended up the two of them causing a short completion from Jackson to Flowers for only about 5 yards. One of the catches in all of training camp so far occurred by Dayton Wade. This was from Cooper Rush, a ball that was thrown over TJ Tampa, dropped right in the basket, right on the sideline. Beautiful toe tap by Dayton Wade. And if you remember Dave Casper's, I think it was the catch that set up the touchdown versus the Colts in the Ghost of the Post game. Dave Casper had a catch on a ball from Stable that was like kind of directly over his head and had to adjust to it. That was this kind of a play. It was right on the sideline, made the play. Another play I remember that was like this is Marquise Brown in 2019 against the Cardinals, a game-winning throw on third down towards the end of the game. They made the third and 10, sealed the game, just an outstanding directly over his head catch that he made. All right. We had Bo Braid did his best to try and dislodge a pass to Zaire Mitchell-Payton. It was about 5 yards. And honestly, it's nice to get in there and get a punch at the ball. And I probably would have made the tackle, or he probably at least had the choice of the tackle or the punch. It didn't get it done, but that's okay. Let me take a moment here. Okay.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
We had a nice coverage play from a combination of JAD and Alexander covering Cunningham. Actually, the ball was a little overthrown. They were both trailing, but laying down their coverage radius and might have been forcing the overthrow from Cooper Rush. We had a nice play by Teddy Buchanan to shut down Ali on a swing pass right. We had, let's see, what's next? Very nice block by the combination of Carson Vinson and Ben Cleveland to spring Keaton Mitchell for what appeared to be a very long run left. So it's good to see. It's good to see those two guys in particular. Vincent, who's really not going to play anything in terms of snaps this year, and Cleveland, who, as was later revealed by Harbaugh, he believes is well behind in the left guard race, or that Voorhees is well ahead. I think I'll read it to you when I get to that point. Nice pressure again in the cone from Broderick Washington. Still had a pass that was good. Jackson to Andrews, a toe tap on the left sideline, about 10 yards, and a defensive offsides. Really nice throw from Jackson. This is probably maybe his best throw of the day. Was about a 25-yard pass by the right sideline to number 18. I always forget who that is. Keith Kirkwood. And Kirkwood caught the ball over Nate Wiggins, not somebody usually a player like Keith Kirkwood is going to beat. So the ball had to be dropped in there pretty well. But it was a very nice pass from Lamar on the play. We had another play where Lamar escaped the pocket in the middle. It looked like there was some dancing back and forth. He escaped in the middle. It looked like a fairly typical Lamar 20-plus yard gain. Of course, you know, the defense is so restricted in terms of what they can do to Lamar. We don't really have a good anchor point to know that he would have been able to get free on that play. But he looked like elusive Lamar on the play, so at least we're happy to see that. The next play, it looked like there was no one in coverage as Jackson threw a 20-yard play down the right sideline to Hopkins. Now, Hopkins was moving over towards that sideline, so I don't know whether it was an out route from maybe the slot or whether he's actually crossing the field from the other side, which I think is probably more likely based on the timing. But there didn't appear to be anyone else in coverage, so it appeared to be some sort of a blown assignment, and Hopkins was all of a sudden behind the defense and caught the ball about 20 yards from the line of scrimmage. So nice, another nice throw, nice play by Hopkins. All right. We had a nice shutdown of the cutback lean of Mitchell by Simpson. Simpson's accumulating some nice plays, certainly in camp. What else we got here? Okay. There was a run right by Jackson for what appeared to be a TD. And Jackson just keeps running. This camp, he just keeps running. But it appeared to be designed. And then just a few plays later, Matabike had a pressure for a sack that was not blown dead. Jackson escaped and appeared to run again for a long TD. And he ran probably 50 to 60 yards, I'd say, on this play. The very next play, Jackson is still at quarterback. Now, normally, you score a touchdown and 11 on 11, so they switch quarterbacks and, you know, go to the next group and whatnot. They might not have thought it was a touchdown, but even if they didn't, I thought they might have changed quarterbacks just because Lamar just winded himself for the long run. But Lamar's right back in there on the very next play at quarterback, threw a bullet to Andrews for about 10 yards between the numbers and the right hash in front of Humphrey. So kind of remarkable, but Lamar really appears to be in very, very fine shape and in some good aerobic shape, which doesn't always come. I mean, you could be at the podium and look like, oh my God, this guy's huge this year. Look at all that muscle and whatnot. But sometimes it doesn't mean they're in great aerobic health. And I remember a few years back, Lardarius Webb failed the conditioning test one year. He's Lardarius Webb. He's a fantastic athlete. It's a little later in his career. You know, he'd been around the league probably about 6 or 7 years at the time this happened, but it was still really strange that someone like that would fail it. But it is possible to be not in the greatest aerobic health if you're going to be in, even if you're in fine shape otherwise physically. We had the defense seemed to put together a lot of good plays in a row here. There was a pass for Wade. It was about 5 yards for circle, and JAD knocked it free. We did have a nice pass from Rush to Wester. That was about 35 yards by the right sideline. He beat Bo Braid on the play and then toe tapped the sideline. So really nice. That's a big play for Wester, by the way. It's not like he's done nothing as a receiver, but he's had some very mixed results as a receiver. He's almost a direct comp for Dayton Wade in a lot of ways in terms of being a guy who would have very similar responsibilities on the term team in terms of gadget plays, receiving duties, and also being a punt returner. And so that's a guy he needs to outplay. Wade had the big play of practice earlier, maybe the play of all of camp by a receiver. But this play by Wester was a really nice one as well, toe-tapping in. We had a very nice play from Jake Hummel, shutting down a run by, I think it was Gilroy, number 87. So some sort of a jet toss or something. And make sure, yeah, Xavier Gilroy. And Hummel shut that down in the backfield. So nice to see Jake Hummel get in there, make a play. And then we had a pass for Wester. Again, it's about 20 yards by the left sideline. And that was knocked down by Marquise Robinson. Marquise Robinson, the reason you may remember the name is I brought him up several times, is a guy who's had the fastest times recorded at some of the Ravens OTAs. So he's been over, I think, might have been over 22 miles an hour. They do some sprinting on the field. I'm talking about during practice. He'd been timed at that kind of a level. We had some things I've already talked about in terms of pressure from Travis Jones and the interception that created. And then we had a pass by Jackson to Kohler that was dislodged by Malachi Starks. We're going through a period here where the offense, almost nothing went right for them. A whole bunch of balls dislodged, intercepted. They're just not able to seemingly secure the football. They ran a little run play with Cooper Rush. They ran another pass play from Cooper Rush to Malik Cunningham, little 5-yard throw. It should have been open. It should have been open for a lot of yak, but he threw it low. Cunningham had to go down to the ground to dig it out. And by the time he got up, of course, there's players on top of him. And so it doesn't end up being a good yak play. So, you know, nice dig out, but not a good play for the offense in general on that. They went and did some 7-on-7, another interception by Jair Alexander there. A little bit of a poorly thrown ball on that one, as I mentioned earlier. Then we had another pass defense by JAD. This one was versus Miller, 10 yards by the right sideline. Then we had a nice pass. This was one of the nice plays for the offense of the day. From Rush to Scotty Washington crossing, about 15 yards between the numbers and the left hash. And it looked to me like Kane was in trailing coverage and nobody else was out front, which means the play went for a lot of yak on that. Scotty Washington looked fast, and Kane might have been a little slow picking up the coverage on that play. So nice to see the offense get one in there at least. I keep going by these pressures by Travis Jones, and I'm thinking I must have missed one when I was counting them all up earlier. I think there were four and not three, but this was another one of those. Another play from Cooper Rush, who overthrew Scotty Washington in the end zone with Kane in coverage this time. So Kane got the best of him in the return engagement. What do we got? We got a 15-yard catch from, looks like, Lamar to Dayton Wade down the right sideline. That was covered by Wiggins. And they had this the long play to Keith Kirkwood, 40 yards down the right sideline, covered by Wiggins. That ball was dropped late, but it was called a touchdown by the referee on site there. So it might have been he crossed the goal line and then he kind of bobbled it or dropped it or even spiked it. But I saw the ball. I thought I saw the ball come out on the ground for what that's worth. Doesn't really matter. All right, we talked about that a little bit. Okay, Cooper Rush threw a pass for Jamal Banks and TJ Tampa got a pass defense about 5 yards from by the right sideline. On that play, also Jake Hummel had a pressure, so nice to see Jake get a couple of plays. And then Keon Martin had a pass defense about 5 yards between the hashes, and that was on fourth down. So that ended what was a situational drill they were doing in a 2-minute drill. Start with a minute and 26 or something, and the ball somewhere close to midfield,
down by three, but the defense got him off the field on four downs right away, and that was impressive with Cooper Rush in there. And then we saw another play from Cooper Rush intended for Xavier Gilroy again, 25 yards down the right sideline. It was intercepted by Reuben Lowry for the last pick of the day, but Lowry's had a big camp so far, couple picks now. He's had a few times the last maybe three practices where he's been beaten more, but I think Lowry is looking more and more like he's going to make the team. I even think if I had to just judge not by when they play, because Braid plays usually with Kane and ahead with the twos at safety, but I would say in terms of his generalized performance, I'd say Lowry is probably ahead right now. So Lowry, Braid, and Kane are three of the very key players to be watching this preseason. They'll be important to watch in the joint practice, and they'll be very important to watch in the preseason. Anything more I need to talk about? We had another near interception. This one was by Keandre Jackson, who ball was about 25 yards down the left sideline, and it was intended for let's see if I have this correct. No, from Leary, but it was nearly intercepted. He got his hands on the ball but couldn't haul it in. And I think there's another blown dead sack two plays later. I don't have who did it, but that was with Leary at quarterback as well. So that's really the report I have on the individual plays from the game. So lots of interesting stuff. Not a balanced day at all. Big win, again, I'd say, for the defense. Yeah, is the defense usually ahead at this time of year? Sure. Are they usually ahead by this much? I would say no. This was exceptionally bad again. I thought, Jackson threw maybe two ill-advised and one not-so-great throw, or maybe it was two not-so-great and one ill-advised throw, but the ball down the left sideline was just a kind of a very poorly underthrown ball. And some of the other ones, particularly the two interceptions by Alexander, I think were just poor decisions in terms of the ball. So we're not seeing something. Maybe we could put it that way. But Lamar still does not look in midseason form right now, even though as a runner, he looks unbelievable. It's just he takes off and seems to be very fit and whatnot. So anyway, we're in a good place, I hope, for this time of camp. We won't see Lamar the entire preseason. We won't see him, I don't believe, in joint practices. I could be wrong about that. Because they protect the quarterbacks, they may let Jackson play some in the joint practices, but they definitely won't have him in there in the preseason game. Getting onto the podium, had a few people up there. Chuck Pagano was first. He had a few things to say. He said other players feed off Jair Alexander's energy, but also his talk. He just yaps all the time, and other players really seem to like that. The Ravens haven't really had a lot of hilarious guys in camp since Terrell Suggs left. I mean, I'm not saying they haven't had any. They've probably had a few. Weddle, in a way, maybe tried to be that guy a little bit too much, and he kind of would say some things I think were a little ill-advised. I think he might have overlapped with Suggs anyway, or he might all have played with Suggs in camp at the same time. But I remember Eric Weddle yelling from one sideline, "Your offense, you look like the Bad News Bears," and they couldn't do anything right. I mean, it's one of these days like today was for the offense where they just made a lot of mistakes. And I didn't think that really was helping at all for him to just, be riding the offense play after play. Suggs is more like it's a quippy one-liner. It's like after Arnold Schwarzenegger makes a kill, he always has to say something at it or say, "I'll be back," or whatever. Suggs was more like that. There was more of a quippy nature to everything. He retortive nature to what he would do. Anyway, going on with Pagano, he mentioned Awuzie is a player who could play slot corner, outside, or even safety. I think that was Childs Walker's question. So good one there for Childs. He talked about what was important in terms of getting the most out of this secondary. I thought this was one of the interesting answers. He said, the talent is there, but it's developing the brotherhood and the relationships. And he spoke specifically about, going over for film to somebody's house and that sort of thing is what might make the difference here. And that really has worked for past Ravens teams in terms of having guys study film together and whatnot. It'd be great to have that kind of thing appear and have the Ravens be in a position where they're constantly wanting to work on that rather than, you know, to the exclusion of other things in their lives that they might be doing. He talked about the focus being on turnovers with talk, drills, and some film of the old Ravens. Like they'd accumulated some film of all of Ravens history, but a lot of Ed Reed in particular in terms of how he would get turnovers, for example. I don't know how that's, you know, telling somebody, well, just be like Ed Reed here, is going to really work, given Ed Reed's instincts were, you know, the greatest anybody's ever seen. And also his ability to deceive the quarterback directly was at ungodly level. So it may or may not actually work, but it may be something that there were some punch outs or some strips that Ed had that are more everyman kind of routines for fumbles or interceptions that people could try and emulate. Trenton Simpson had an interesting comment on exactly that topic. He said they're taking the turnovers, they're taking the attitude of shots on goal, and meaning that anytime you punch the ball free, that's kind of like or try to punch the ball, that's a shot on goal. If it comes loose, great, you're all over it on the ball on the ground, and hopefully you get there first. But you got to have a lot of shots on goal to try and generate a lot of turnovers. I asked him about playing next to Roquan Smith. He said not only is Roquan somebody he can follow on the field, but that he's really appreciated his relationship with him off the field, and he's trained with him early this offseason. I know Roquan has a lot of respect for Simpson's physical training and called him a Greek god when he was at the podium, and Buchanan as well. They both look that way. Simpson was asked about Teddy Buchanan. Is he a competitor? And he said, well, yeah, he is, but he's also a teammate. And, you know, he thinks he'll be a successful linebacker in the NFL. And, you know, that's the best attitude you can possibly have about somebody who plays the same position as you in the NFL. So hopefully they can get along. And maybe some point, if Roquan was hurt, they'd have to play together, maybe with Teddy Buchanan at the mic and Simpson at his more familiar will position. Would be, I think, how it would, you know, play out. I had one particular play I wanted to ask him about from last season, about Kyle Van Noy. And you've heard me talk about this probably once or twice if you've listened to this show, but Kyle Van Noy missed a coverage assignment last year. And it was obvious Trenton Simpson ran over after the play and was, you know, talking a mile a minute, appeared to Van Noy. And Van Noy, his back is to you, so you can't see what he's saying, but he kind of tapped Simpson on the chest as if to say, yeah, I know. That's on me. That's my bad. And Simpson immediately shut up. It was a great moment for both of them because Simpson knew when to shut up, kind of like the old thing about, you know, in marriage, when you're wrong, admit it. When you're right, shut the hell up. And you know, if people could just follow that generally, that's great. This was something where both of them did exactly what they were supposed to do. And I think Simpson kind of echoed that accountability today at the podium. You can listen to his exact words. I'll butcher them if I try and say them back. Nate Wiggins was asked about Jair. He said he's one of one, like Marlowe. I'd say I assume Marlowe is a different one of one, and they're not two of two, you know, kind of thing in this set over here. But yes, I think that's what he means. He says he's seeing the field much better and anticipating the play better rather than just understanding his own assignment and then trying to lean on his athleticism to make plays. And he said that's what he was doing last year. I don't know if I really believe that. I mean, Nate Wiggins had a great rookie year. If he was really only relying on his athleticism, he didn't know what he was doing out there, then that's my feeling about Emmanuel, for example, versus Starks in terms of the greatness potential of those two players. Nate Wiggins has unlimited potential if he was truly just trying to get by on his athleticism last year because he had a great rookie year. Okay, and he acknowledged that he dropped a lot of potential turnovers last season. The turnovers question kept coming up as it, you know, has a lot with defensive players this year, but he dropped a lot of potential turnovers last year. And I heartily concur with that assessment. He dropped quite a few balls. John Harbaugh at the podium talked about the soft tissue injury for Tez Walker. You know, unfortunate timing is all I can say about that. And hopefully he won't be kept out of the preseason game for it. Andrew Vorhees, this is a big one, Harbaugh said, is the clear leader in the left guard race. But Ben Cleveland is coming on. Now, you never want to leave a player out of it or say that a player is way behind because he hasn't played as well kind of thing. I think that, you know, maybe John would have said that if he was really salty about the player, and the fact that maybe he's not salty about Cleveland is a good thing now. Sees him as a legitimate backup lineman, but Voorhees says is going to win the left guard race is what I would take from this. It'll be interesting to see how much each of those guys plays in this preseason game. I player like Fa'alele may not play. I do not expect Linderbaum or Stanley to play. And then I don't expect Rosengarten to play either. So it's a real question as to how much time do you put Andrew Voorhees out there with some backups where he won't necessarily have the same continuity experience with, and you know, risk possibly a pit injury of some sort. So it may be Cleveland, it may be Voorhees, it may be both, and it may be some backups pretty quickly after each of those guys gets a little bit of a trial. But if you're Ben Cleveland, you also got to look at the preseason as a way to get some of your real live fire in. So I hope he gets something meaningful in there. So they have a stadium practice tomorrow. I'll be going to that, but I'll be going as a fan. Maureen and I are going, and we're gonna go to the club deck. We'll hear the interviews of Sashi Brown and of Eric DaCosta. John Harbaugh is also supposed to be there to ask some questions. The Ravens have made the point that I should not report on that set of interviews, so I'm not going to. But I'll probably talk a little bit about the event itself and give you an idea about what the Ravens do. They just do a wonderful job with these kind of things, generally speaking. And if this is at all like past events that I've seen with the suite holders and State of the Ravens event, you really get a very special experience out of that kind of an evening. And the Ravens do it upright. And I'm expecting that really tomorrow night, and just to have an enjoyable night off. That doesn't mean I won't be taking any notes, because I'll certainly be going to practice after those interviews, and Maureen and I will be looking at it together and picking up on some stuff. But anyway, that'll be it for today. Thanks for all the listens, folks. Hope you're enjoying these camp notes. Always leave a note out there. Tell a friend about it in terms of the value of these if you like them. And if there's something you want me to look for, I'm happy to try and do that. But let me know maybe as a response to the promo of this when it goes out on Twitter. Thanks again. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. Oh.